Welcome back to the B-Files, an in-depth investigative series on Dan Burrish. Did he work at Area 51? Did he meet an entity from another world? Is he part of a mysterious group known as the MJ-12? Do they really exist? Our guest is Mrs. John Crane, mother of Dan Burrish, and we are at the world-famous Caravan Coffee Shop at the Sahara Hotel on the north end of the Las Vegas Strip. Doreen, welcome to the show. You know, I understand most people call you Dodie.
Correct.
First of all, let's talk about your son's education. He graduated from UNLV with a Bachelor of Arts degree in psychology, right? And then he took a different twist. He attended a Catholic seminary, is that right?
He went to the seminary after UNLV. Then he got his PhD from SUNY of New York, and
State University of New York.
Right, and he...
Now, you've seen that degree.
Yes, I have. My daughter-in-law stole it off the wall.
Well, she admitted that, I think.
Yes, she did, and I'll send you a tape on that. Everybody thinks he didn't get a PhD, but I know he did. For number one is, I brought it in the house when he got it in the mail. It was in a tube. And he was so proud of that his dad framed it immediately and put it on his wall in his bedroom. And it wasn't a few days later, Debbie came over and took it right off the wall and said she was going to make a copy and then bring it back.
They were married by this time?
Yeah.
So before he met Debbie, tell me a little bit about what your son was doing.
Well, he was going to Area 51. They would call him at home. He would input a number on the phone, like a password number or whatever you want to call it, and they would pick him up in front of our door.
Did you ever see who picked him up?
Yeah, sure did.
Was it an official car?
It was an official black car that picked him up right in front of our door.
And how would he be dressed when he would go to Area 51?
And just Levi's, yeah, and whatever, T-shirt, right, whatever. Right. He wasn't dressed.
Now, there's some question about whether or not he was a naval officer or not. You've seen him in uniform, though.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
The uniforms were there at the house.
Yes.
And you've seen him get on airplanes in uniform.
I have seen him get onto the airplanes, yes. It's called Janet Airlines. That goes to Area 51. I have seen him get on there. I used to take him there.
Take him out to the...
To the airport.
Yeah, to the executive part.
Right.
And now, when he would go to Area 51, he didn't do that every day. It was only like on a contingency basis of some sort. They would call him, he would phone in a code, and he would go.
That's right. That's the way it was. They'd call him at home, he'd put in the code, and he would wait for them to pick him up. And when he got his car, he would take his own car and go either to Hughes Airport or to Nellis Air Force Base.
Now, you actually, I think, told me one time that you went out to Nellis to check to see if his car was really there. Because you were kind of curious what was happening.
I did. I went there and checked it because I just wanted to make sure that things were on the up. I didn't. You know, a kid is a kid,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but about how old was he during this time?
Let's see. Danny had to be in his 20s.
Still living at home.
Still living at home.
Now, he had already gone, to Divinity School someplace? Or?
Yeah, he had gone up to Northern California to the seminary up there, St. Patrick's Seminary.
Was he religious as a son growing up?
He was brought up religious. He was brought up in the Catholic Church. We went to church together and at times. I didn't go every Sunday because, I can pray at home as well as I can pray in church. That's the way I was. Danny, when he was small, he used to go to the church. I'd take him to church, and he'd go into a little catechism, little class-like. And one day he got upset with me because he said that I was just dumping him off. He wanted to go to the mass. He didn't want to sit with the other kids. So he just thought I was dumping him off.
So he's always been intelligent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. He was always in the book.
And when he went to UNLV, he graduated from high school here in Nevada?
Danny graduated from high school in England. And then England. Right, and when he got here...
Okay, why was he in England?
He went to school there with Dr. Bunyan, took him, because he was so intelligent. He was trying to teach him biology and...
So he was interested in science all
along. In science all along. And when he got back, he took a GED here in Nevada to... Just because UNLV would not accept the high school diploma from England. And so he said, okay, so I'm going to go ahead and take the GED. So he did, and he passed with high colors.
Now, when he was expressing interest in this sort of science, and then he would go up to Area 51, he really didn't deny he was going up there, right?
No, he did not deny.
In fact, you saw a W-4?
Yes, I saw a W-4. My husband did.
Do you remember who made that W-4?
It was a naval intelligence. I don't remember exactly all the wording to it, but it was from the Navy. And John made his taxes, and we didn't keep a copy of it, which John kicks himself every day for not doing it, but wish we had now, you know.
How did he become a parole officer? I mean, what brought that on? Was he always interested in law enforcement, too?
He just wanted to try something and work, you know, on the side. So he just kind of liked people, and he just wanted to make sure that he liked to learn things. Danny was a learner, you know, and he wanted to learn everything you put in front of him. And to him, it was a challenge to have all these no good for nothing. He'd call them out there and get them off the street, you know, and that's what he was.
So now he had an ethic, a moral ethic that was strong.
That's right.
And enough that he wanted to go to a Catholic school to...
He didn't go to a Catholic school.
To be a priest, though.
Oh, that's the seminary.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I didn't think he...
So then he's interested in law enforcement, too.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to, he went to Area 51, obviously. How many days would he go, you think? Various?
Sometimes it would vary 2-3 days a week. Sometimes it would be 1 day a week. It just depended when they wanted him.
And he would come back and tell you and his father.
He would talk more to his dad about it, because... I was working, his dad wasn't, and, you know...
No, his dad is handicapped, or...?
Well, his dad has been disabled for 30 years.
So the dad was home all the time?
All the time, yeah.
So when he would come back from this duty, he would probably talk to him, tell him what he ran across.
He did.
What do you have to say, basically, about his work?
Majority of the thing that he did not like was that they had... armed guards behind him ready to shoot if you did anything, you know, and it made...
All the time he was there.
Okay. And he had armed guards there. And then he would do the slides, and he'd talk to his dad about the slides. He would come home, sometimes he was wrung out. He was just completely wrung out.
In other words, he'd take samples, and I assume from J-Rod, what I hear about later.
He did.
Did he ever mention J-Rod to you?
Yes, he did.
What did he say?
He said he was... Danny had compassion for him. He thought, the poor guy is sick. We got to help him. You know, he's a human... he figured he was part of the race or whatever, but he felt sorry for him because he said they kept taking scales off from him and testing him and doing this and that. And he just said to his dad one day, he says, I feel sorry for the poor guy. He says, he's sick. He hurts. He says, when he hurts, it makes me hurt, and that's the way he was, you know, Danny was.
Did he ever say what was wrong with him exactly?
It had something to do with arthritis, like, for the human, but they were, you know, really in bad shape with it, so I don't know. I don't know too much about
it. Did he ever describe what he looked like?
He did to his dad, not to me, because I didn't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
I want to talk a little bit about you've been estranged from him for some time.
Sure have.
And that last time you saw him, he married Debbie, and it appears that Debbie is managing his life.
She sure is. She's got him so brainwashed, it's not even funny.
So now you're saying that the last time you saw him, he was at the house, not himself anymore.
No, no, he was not himself. Danny had an injection in September of 93.
Tell me a little bit about that.
That injection was done at his home. He walked into his home. He was living in an apartment. He walked in there, and he said somebody just took a needle and shoved it in his neck.
He called you on the phone to tell you.
He called me on the phone. He wanted to know where Debbie was. We couldn't find her for hours. And I went to pick him up and brought him to the doc, to the hospital. They did say he had been injected in the neck. They could see the hole, but they couldn't say.
Which hospital?
Desert Springs.
Okay. That's where I went one time with pneumonia.
No. Yeah, he, and they could not tell what was in his blood. They didn't know the mm-hmm. stuff that was injected. And it took a couple of days to get the results, but they couldn't say one way or another. But they did see that he was injected in his neck. They did see that. And from that day on, my son, it was not my son. He was completely different.
Well, you mean just in demeanor or physically, did he look the same?
Physically, he looked like he was worn out, like he so tired that he couldn't hardly, you know, stand up sometimes to me. I mean, he didn't look like himself either. But mentally, he was not my son. I mean, he acted different. It was just, I can't explain it. I just can't explain it.
Well, I've heard the story about maybe there's more than one Dan Gray.
There is more than one than Dan. One was brought in my home by my lovely daughter-in-law. She brought him in, and I didn't have a chance to confront him. But Dan has a scar in the back of his neck. This Duke does not have a scar in the back of his neck. And I caught that. And the minute I did, Debbie wanted to leave now. About the time I told John about it, they were already down the stairs. Or John would have grabbed him. But you know, it was not my son. And there is another guy that comes around where we live that looks like Dan, and it isn't Dan.
You mean he sits out in the car
sits
someplace?
Out in the car, in the, across the street. I'll go out there, and I'll say, hi. Hi, Dan. And he goes, Mrs. Crane, you know better. And it's not my son. I mean, it's a spitting image of him, and it's not him. And the reason...
And that was the last time you saw him?
Yeah. It's the last time I seen him.
Did you talk to him on the phone after that?
I tried to, but I can't. She won't let me talk to him. I'm not allowed. She'd hang up on me. She'd do everything.
Well, there was a report one time that he was deceased. In fact, it made the radio stations that he was, but that's not true either. He's around.
He's around, and John tried to talk to him on the phone, and she hung up on John, on his dad, again. And we tried to have Metro, and Metro came in and checked him out, and he was alive.
Now, he legally changed his name from Crane to Burrish, and come to find out, Debbie Burrish, that's not really her name.
I don't know if she's adopted or not, but that's not her real dad. Burrish is not her real dad.
So the infamous Navy Captain Burrish, who you met?
Yes. No, not a nice guy. Not a nice guy at all. He threatened John and I that we would be dead if we said one word to anything about him. He'd plant us underneath a cactus. That's what he said to me, and I said, go ahead and try. I said, if you do, make sure I'm dead.
And this was, were you able to talk to Dan at this time in your life to explain to him that, his father just threatened me?
I did tell him.
Her father.
Her father, and I did tell him, and he said, Mom, just stay away from him. And that's all I was told. And I did. And I never went to get little Tiffany again. Never did.
Did they, at the time, when Dan started going out to Area 51, everybody already pretty much knew what was going on out there.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of people that knew about it. And as far as the, at the university, you know, everybody knew he was doing something there, and they were always questioning him.
Is that how he got the job through the university, you think?
Yes. That's where they picked him up. And that's where he came home one day and told his dad he had signed a contract for life to help him out. And his dad blew it. He was only 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
And his dad blew it because he said, you should have brought this piece of paper home first. You're too young, you know.
Yeah.
He said, well, I did, and it's too late. So
he belongs to somebody for life after 18.
Oh, yeah. He belongs to somebody else. But he was okay up until he got injected. He was fine.
And did the... He went home, and it was never the same guy.
Never the same guy, and he has. They're programming him with the past, with his past, nothing but lies. They're not giving us a chance to talk to our son, period. I mean, they don't want us to. They don't want us to try and build his memory back that they took away, because his memory is totally gone.
So he actually signed this contract with the government when he first started college.
Yeah.
And this was a way for him to go to school.
That's right. That's what he signed. That's when they caught him. It was right on UNLV campus. That's when they found him.
And
Danny had a cancer research going, and it was known all over the campus. It was known in England. It was known, in fact, FDA. Is it FDA?
Yes,
Okay, the FDA has a copy of his research. I have a copy of his research. I still have that. I have it on the lock and key over to somebody else's house, so they couldn't get it.
Research from UNLV, you mean?
Research from UNLV and research. Danny's been doing this cancer research since he was a kid. His uncle had cancer, and he said he wanted to find a cure when he was a real young kid. And he would do things with little fishes and inject them with different little things to see if they would, you know, get sick and he could help them out.
So it would be fair to say that Dan Crane was a child prodigy, really.
Yeah, he had a doctor at Long Beach Memorial that taught him how to read slides at 10 and 12 years old. I mean, he was so interested in it, Dr. Reynolds took him over and helped him out. Gave him slides to read and everything. I mean, it was just, I used to take him over there once a week on Saturdays. And
now, did he ever mention the Magic 12, MJ?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he has. Oh, yeah.
What would he tell you about that when he was younger? I mean, he obviously signed his contract.
He'd tell his dad who they were. Like I said, he talked more to his dad about certain little things. Because I was a little bit scared and leery, but I'm not scared anymore. I mean, come and tell me more, you know.
So it's been, since 1993 or 95?
October 5th, 1993 is the last time I seen my son.
But you've been getting strange phone calls even recently.
Oh, yeah. We get a lot of hang-up phone calls, except when I got upset and said that, well, when I got upset.
Yeah, okay. And they stopped calling.
Yeah.
But you still get one occasionally.
I get one. Yeah, I got one on October 2nd, and I got one on November 2nd.
Dodie, we appreciate you coming by here at the Sahara. You used to work here, didn't you? Old Home Week. We'll be talking to you again very shortly, as we have some other issues to cover with you, and we appreciate your cooperation. Coming up next, Larry Dickin and I discuss whether or not the SUNY diploma is real or what? Interesting stuff. Don't go away. Before we talk to Larry, I want to talk to you about Fate Magazine. They are bringing this program to you. Fate has been on the newsstand since 1948, offering true reports of the strange and unusual. The February issue is full of exciting and mind-boggling stories, including a detailed report on a possible underwater UFO base off the coast of California. Werewolves and Valentine's Day. There's a connection. Another feature, one of the interesting little stories in this month's magazine that I liked, was the attack on the Temple 1 comet. Sean Castile has a very interesting article. And it's all about space aliens and rock music. Now click on the banner on this page and go to the Fate website, and you'll find interesting stories of the supernatural and paranormal there. You can subscribe from there, but if you are not ready for a subscription, I suggest the next time you're near your local newsstand, pick up a copy of Fate magazine. True tales of the strange and the unknown.
The B-Files, an in-depth look at Dan Burrish.
Hello, this is Deborah Burrish. Dodie told the truth. When it was time to take it away for safekeeping, I took it. everyone else was afraid to. I popped it off his wall and nicked it. Simple as that. So many pusses afraid to do their job. Hulu got over it. I gave it to Mikey and Ann Mantel Trick for safekeeping.
The voice of Debbie Burrish, admitting she took the diploma. And we have Larry Dickin on the phone, and Larry's on the line from Secaucus, New Jersey. And Larry, we've been doing our own independent investigation into this thing. I don't think there's any doubt that John and Doreen think that was a real diploma.
I could tell by hearing their interviews and reading the documentation that we have that where they've made statements that I'm certainly convinced that they truly believe that their son got a degree.
The font's not exactly right. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Getting the story, from the Cranes, and also getting Debbie's story about how she took the literally took the diploma off the wall in Dan's bedroom and had it sent off to England for safekeeping, quote. Why not put it in a bank safe deposit box in Las Vegas? I mean, why England? Who knows? But at any rate, people are bugging everybody so much about whether or not he really has a degree. And where's the document to prove it? So she says, well, Dodie's right. I took it, and I'm going to get a copy back. Not the original, but a copy. And, the State University of New York is a very, very big university. It has campuses all over New York State. Stony Brook is just one of many, many campuses. Stony Brook is one of the leading scientific universities, for study and research in the United States or even in the world. It ranks right up there with MIT and Caltech and University of California, Berkeley. Stony Brook is one of the top schools.
Now you heard Dodie explain how she made the reservations over the Las Vegas Hilton for three men, supposedly from SUNY of New York,
Stony right.
Brook. They come in, and they actually give Dan Burrish, at that time, Dan Crane, a verbal test. He has lots of meetings with them, and then he gets this in the mail.
Right.
And now, that's not the way normal PhDs
right.
are given.
Normally, a PhD, you have to write a paper, okay? You have your thesis, and then you have your paper, and then you go before a committee of the professors in the department in which you're getting your degree, and you sit down with them. They have all read your paper, and they start asking you questions, and it's basically a question and answer session. If they are satisfied that your documentation and your research meets their standards, that this is something of worth, then they award you your degree. Not right then and there. Of course, you wait for graduation time, and you go to the ceremony like everybody else, and you get a degree.
Now I have a little different take on this than a lot of people. What better way for a black project to exist than to get somebody very bright, like Dan Crane evidently was, make sure he could pass all of this stuff, he could actually do the work, let him think he gets his degree, and then you have plausible deniability later when he starts
this
talking.
This is true. I mean, that's certainly a consideration, is that Dan Crane actually, really, in his mind, believes that he received a degree, and part of that I can base that on his mother's comments about how excited he was when he received it, and his father mounted it on the wall. It's like, this is the real deal. And, of course, he had been to that oral examination. And what further proof do you need? And the fact that, well, I didn't go to graduation like everybody else, well, of course not, because I work for the MJ Group.
And as his mother laid out in the interview, he did sign an agreement to work for the U.S. government for life, and they paid his way to college.
As such that he went to college in a very strange way, because at the very same time that he was purportedly going to school at SUNY, he was also employed, for the state of Nevada as in the parole department.
As a parole officer. Now, the interesting thing about it is SUNY says they never, ever have any classes on Saturday.
Which is when he supposedly went to SUNY, is that they flew him cross-country every weekend, and he went to classes.
Well, now, Doreen says that they did fly him cross-country, but not every weekend, only a couple of times. And originally they were from New England, and Dan would take advantage of the transportation up there and going up to New England and visit his parents, their relatives. And so he did leave town a couple of times.
Right, for some purpose.
Yeah, so we're not sure about that. But we've only really started off on this quest. We have lots more about the degree that will be coming up, the PhD.
Right.
And we also have lots of information about Area 51 and whether or not Dan Crane worked there or not. That's all coming up on the next episode.
Jerry, I do want to mention that associated with this particular aspect of the validity of the degree, the actual paperwork itself, is that out on the site associated with this part of the story have the photograph, the blow-up of the document that Debbie is holding so that you can see the print font and the style of the document compared with a real document issued by SUNY, all right, in the same time period, middle to late 1980s. So, is that once you set a style, and I researched this, is SUNY's look and feel of their documents, whether they're bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, or doctorates, is they all look the same. And they have looked the same for 20 or 30 years. There's been very little change. The only difference is between schools. In other words, SUNY Stony Brook versus SUNY Albany versus SUNY Rochester or City University of New York. All of these are SUNY campuses. And so they allow the degree, the color of the paper to be a little bit different, things like that. But the font, the printing, and the placement of the printing is consistent.
Thank you, Larry. Our time's up for this half hour. We'll be back with another episode on the B-Files. We still haven't finished with the SUNY PhD story. Is it real? Is it a fraud? And who was fraud on? We have some interesting details, I promise you. Plus some other little-known facts about Dan Burrish. And then, of course, we'll get to the juicy part, the J-Rod and Area 51. It's all coming up on future episodes of The B-Files. I'm Jerry Pippin.